This is Matt Wells at UN News. While nations continue to grapple with major global issues as the new year dawns, such as disarmament and climate change, there's reason to hope that they will work together to resolve the biggest threat to humanity. That's the message from Tatiana Volovaya, Director General of the United Nations in Geneva. In a wide-ranging interview recorded last year with UN News' Daniel Johnson, Ms. Volovaya explains how she sees the geopolitical situation from her vantage point at the UN's European headquarters.
It's a challenge, but it's a very important challenge because I want to continue everything which was done by my predecessors, but at the same time, of course, it's necessary to move forward to see what additionally can be done in all the spheres which are part of United Nations office in Geneva.
Now, one of the first things you had to do was talk to the Conference on Disarmament.
Yes, I did.
And that's a pretty daunting thing to have to do for anybody. It's got a huge amount of history in that room, the disarmament chamber here at the United Nations Geneva. And you echoed the words of your predecessor, Michael Muller, talking about sleepwalking into disaster if nothing is done to break this deadlock. Now, what are your thoughts about breaking that deadlock?
No, of course, it's necessary to break a deadlock because it's a common saying that for 20 years, Conference on Disarmament didn't negotiate any new treaties. But that's not the whole truth because a Conference on Disarmament has been working over all these 20 years. And though there are no new treaties, still there were lots of discussions which were going on, lots of efforts, and we see that really the member states are trying to move forward. It's very difficult because we live in a very divided world.
Why is it more difficult today than perhaps it might have been 20 years ago? What are the new challenges that member states are having to tackle at the moment?
Well, you know, there is a serious geopolitical tension, which we did not have 20 years ago. 20 years ago, the world still was celebrating, you know, the end of the history, and we all thought that we're coming into a new era where there will be no geopolitical conflicts or geopolitical tensions. Alas, we are still in the old era with many geopolitical tensions, even more than 20 years before. But that means that we need multilateral efforts and we need the Conference on Disarmament even more than before.
In the same vein, how has climate change affected the discussions on disarmament, if at all?
Well, of course it's affecting because we have to be realistic. Climate change is the crucial challenge to humanity, because it might be even more crucial than just disarmament, because climate change can lead and is already leading to new military conflicts. And we can expect more and more conflicts taking place exactly because of the climate change. Well, if we look at the history, many works have been conducted before the climate change, but for water, for fertile territories, for soil, etc., etc., etc. So we know that can happen. So that means that we really have to be prepared for the climate change and the possibilities. So we have to start thinking about new challenges to the disarmament, not only climate change, but also new technologies. And that's exactly what we are trying to do in the Conference on Disarmament, not only negotiating the treaties, but also have some expertise, having some workshops, conference, because it's necessary to speak, it's necessary to communicate with the civil society, non-governmental institutions, with expertise. The more knowledge we have here, the more chances that finally the conference will start producing effective results.
Was that not happening before? Were we not talking to the experts from civil society, from the scientific sphere, from the military? Was that not happening at the United Nations Geneva, the primary international body for disarmament discussions?
You know, we were. But I would say last years really, I think, changed the track, because the society on the whole is more and more thinking about the possibilities of arms race, about the possibilities of military conflicts because of climate change. I think 5 years ago, or 6 years ago, the situation was quieter. People were not so preoccupied, but these days the situation is really alarming. And that's why, for example, during the opening of the General Assembly, Secretary General spoke about this rise of tensions, rise of terrorism, the possibility of great fracture in the world. He spoke about the necessity to preserve unity, to preserve multilateralism. So I think the situation is more serious and more sensitive now than several years ago. And from my point of view, we have to use this situation in order to start moving forward. You know the famous saying that the night is most dark before the dawn. So when you have such serious tensions, when you have so many different challenges, maybe it's easier to make a visionary, ambitious decision to move together on a multilateral basis, on the basis of consensus, but forward.
And staying with disarmament again, you happen to be one of four women now in charge of disarmament at the United Nations. There's yourself. You are the Secretary General's Special Representative on Disarmament Affairs here at the United Nations Geneva. There is Anja Kaspersen, who is the head of Disarmament Affairs too. Renate Duan, who's the head of the United Nations Institute on Disarmament Research. And in addition to that, there's Izumi Nakamitsu, and she oversees UN Disarmament Affairs. So it's maybe happenstance that there are four women now leading UN Disarmament Affairs, but what do you think, if any, you can maybe bring to it that a man couldn't?
I think we really need to have a gender diversity and gender balance. You know, before, no, many years ago, nobody was surprised that at all these levels and positions you mentioned, there were only men, and everybody took it for granted. Nobody was asking how come all these positions are taken for men. So disarmament as armament were always part of some kind of a male-dominated spheres. So now we're returning to a normal process of things. We need gender parity, gender balance. Yes, women are thinking sometimes differently. That doesn't mean that we should only women lead disarmament. There should be a balance, because exactly in some cases, for example, women know better how better to use the money we're using now for the arms race. So there are certain positive things which women can bring. At the same time, women are sometimes more balanced when there are discussions. Sometimes they are more diplomatic, more flexible, more open to compromise. So I think we need a very good combination between male thinking and women thinking. And of course, sometimes I'm joking that that's men who are responsible for armaments. So it's time now for women to take care of for disarming them.
So in the hope that there's going to be a breakthrough on the deadlock in disarmament discussions, later this week, Tolstoy's War and Peace is coming to town. It's being flown in the manuscript on Thursday to Geneva. And it's going to be take pride of place in a new exhibition on celebrating 100 years of multilateralism, 100 years after the League of Nations was founded. So how do you think that Tolstoy would think about multilateralism today compared with how it was back in his day?
Well, the first thing, maybe you know that War and Peace of Tolstoy should not be translated as War and Peace.
You're teaching me something new.
It should be translated War and the World. Because in Russian, мир, война и мир, мир has double meaning, peace and the world. So he made it mostly about the war and the world. So it's a second very important meaning. It's about how the war influences the world.
So what are the lessons we should perhaps take from it today?
I think the most important lesson is that multilateralism is always changing. You know, in the time of Lev Tolstoy, there were several powers. Well, when he was describing the war of Napoleon, there were several powers. France, Russia, Great Britain, Austria, Prussia. Practically, that was all. These several countries made the war and then made the peace, and there was a Viennese Congress. Well, and practically 100 years later, again, not so many countries were preparing the Treaty of Paris. After the Second World War, much more countries were building the basis of the United Nations. But again, not all the nations we know today, sovereign nations, were at that time considered to be sovereign states. So multilateralism is changing. So we are finally speaking about real multilateralism. Multilateralism not between grand puissance, not finding the leader of one world, but finding a consensus, a common ground for all the participants of the multilateral world. It's a challenge as it is, because to find a consensus between 193 member states of the United Nations is very difficult. But there is another thing. When we're speaking about modern multilateralism, we have to understand that the usual actors of multilateralism have changed. Before, these were just the sovereign states. Now we have other players in the international arena, international organizations, regional economic organizations with supranational authorities delegated to them by sovereign states. We have global companies working all around the world. Finally, we have non-governmental organizations, sometimes very active in certain spheres. So real current multilateralism should combine all these actors again. So what we see now, I don't call it a crisis of multilateralism. It's just the way of going to a new. It's a tradition of multilateralism. The crisis is always the new beginning. What we have now, it's a beginning of a modern multilateralism, which will be multilateralism of the 21st century.